Welcome to Winning the Moment, the podcast that explores the art of living the life you want and becoming the person you want to be. Your host, Cody Adent, is a published author and the mind behind the book, Winning the Moment. This isn't just a podcast. It's a guide and a roadmap to inspire and empower you to conquer life's challenges, embrace your wins, learn from your losses, and make the most of every single moment in your life.
Welcome to episode 20 of Winning the Moment. I've got a great friend of mine, Sonny, here, and he shares some incredible stories from his time shared in the military to riding the Reddit stock and crypto wave to becoming an actor on big titles like Jason Bourne and Yellowstone. You're going to want to stay tuned to the end because the last message he shares with us is so well said and something that I think everyone can relate with. I hope you enjoyed the episode and like and subscribe. Welcome back to another episode of Winning the Moment. Today, I've got a good friend of mine, Sonny, here, and he had told me he was going to be in St. George today. So I thought, well, let's make sure we get you on the podcast. And then as we're having an opening conversation here, it turns out that his plans were canceled and he left at 4 o'clock this morning just so he could be here. So it would have been an honor anyways, but it's an extra honor now. So Sonny, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I love it.
So you just got back from a deployment, correct?
Just a little mini summer training.
Okay.
In Louisiana is like just some AT, we call it.
Okay. AT stands for
annual training.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So we just go out there and just revamp our skills of what we know of the helicopter and all that kind of stuff and be able to do what we do 100%, you know. So
when's the last time you had to go overseas?
I got 2021, summer of 21.
Okay. How long were you gone for?
I was gone for a whole year. It was summer of 20 to 21. So,
wow, a year.
Yeah.
And where were you?
Afghanistan. I was all over Afghanistan. We were I started in Kandahar and then went up to Dalki, they nickname it Rocket City. A lot of stuff happened up there. And then ended up in Bagram. So,
yeah, man.
For a whole year.
That's wild. I was just flying home from Florida this week and so I was watching a movie on the plane called The Covenant. Have you seen that? It's got Jake Gyllenhaal in it and it's a story of a Afghanistan interpreter and this crew that went out and found explosives. Like that was their job, was to find like where they were storing the IEDs.
Yeah.
And the troop got ambushed and the interpreter basically carried his lieutenant all the way across Afghanistan back to the base. And then they like didn't help him get out. And so then the captain flew back and found him and got him out of there, extracted him. It was a great movie.
Is it new? Is it?
I think it's new. Yeah. I never watched movies. So it's like I'd never even heard of it. And I was just on the plane, like looking for something good to watch. Yeah, and it was incredible. I loved it.
The Covenant?
The Covenant. Yeah. You got to check it out. So Sonny and I, we met at Cars for Kids. So if you have listened to episodes before, you know, that's a big part of what we do. Breck was on and talked a lot about Cars for Kids. The year that I met you, was that your first year when we went to Colorado and everything?
That was just like a month or two after I got back from Afghanistan.
Wow. So how did you get into Cars for Kids? Who brought you into it?
Cougar in Italy. I knew him prior to leaving on deployment. So he had talked about it when I got back and told me to go. I almost didn't go. Like I was just... I remember it was a couple of days before, you know, prior to the day it happening. I had typed his number in to call him and everything. Like, hey, I can't make it. I'll just, you know, keep the fun, you know, the money or everything for the charity. And I've got something to come up. But it was only because I didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
I just didn't want to go and go into that world.
Yeah, it can be intimidating for sure. Yeah.
Very much so. So I was just like, I remember looking at my phone. I almost pressed send a call. And I'm like, something's telling me to put my phone away and just go to the trip. And I'm so glad I did.
Because now, so that one that you went on, the first one was when we went to Colorado, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you did, and then last year was up the coast.
Up the coast.
So this is your third one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, that's awesome.
I love it. This is what I plan my whole year around.
I know. It's,
I love it.
It's such an event. So we leave on Tuesday's the official day. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave Monday to get like halfway to Aspen and then I'll drive the rest on Tuesday. But
okay.
I'm pretty excited.
Dude, I love your, I can't wait to see your dad again.
Oh yeah. I'm really glad he's going. I mean, I'm disappointed Megan can't come, but it's going to be really fun to have him there with me. And now he'll actually get to experience more of it because he's always at the back of the pack, just getting blown past by everyone. So now he's going to get to really experience it.
Oh, man. Yep. Yep.
So, okay. So you come on Cars for Kids. And then last year you got the Spirit of Cars for Kids Award. Anyone that knows Sonny knows he always makes everything more fun. I'll never forget when you and Megan went in the ocean. We were like, what, at the very tip of Oregon? Is that where we were at the time when you guys went in there?
It was right, I want to say before Bandon, or was it between Bandon and...
Yeah, you're right. It was before Bandon.
Okay.
Before Bandon Dunes, we went out to this ocean, and it was like this really cool, like all black rock, like smooth rock beach. And there were whales out there, and the water was freezing. And Megan and Sonny went in the water for like, for what, Chase said he'd give $3,000 to the charity
if you guys
did
it. Yeah, I can't remember who it was.
Something like that. So
I heard somebody pop up some money. I'm like, yeah, I'll freaking jump in.
Dude. Yeah, and so you and Megan both go in the freezing cold water. And
I'm in there thinking, maybe this was a bad idea.
How cold was it?
It was pretty cold. I wouldn't probably do it again.
Do you do the cold immersion stuff?
I haven't. I see people do all the time, but I haven't done it. No.
I haven't. I just don't like being cold.
I don't. So in Louisiana, on annual training, you know, we're out in the field, so we're basically... Yeah. We sleep in tents, sometimes just not on a tent. We're just on the cot or maybe on the ground or something. And so there was a period of time we didn't shower for like a week or so. We would just, I'd do baby white baths.
Yeah.
Just, you know, get all the good areas or whatnot. So the times we did have showers in the buildings close to the base, they were just cold showers. And just every time it was, I'd have to psych myself up just to take
a
shower.
Hard.
Just get in there, turn it, because it had the nozzle, like hot and cold, but it was just cold every, you know, wherever you pointed it. And so just for a few seconds, you could hear everybody again. They're like, just as they're showering, trying to wipe down everything, quick showers, to say the least. So
I remember the first time I was like, I was reading Wim Hof's book and I was like, oh, this can't be, like, it's easy. It was like filled up my bathtub, which is huge. And I got like my one tray of like ice from my refrigerator, pour it in the bathtub, and it like barely disperses like across. It's like nothing. It's like not even an ice bath, you know? And I was like, this should be easy. I'll just sit in here for a couple minutes. I like put my foot in. I was like, no, nope, hard no. And I was like, no ice at all. You know, I don't know how they do it.
I don't know how they do it. I've thought about doing it, but I can't, you know.
I believe that it's good for you, and I could see like the mental fortitude you'd be building.
Yeah.
Through doing it. Mm-hmm. But it's like, man, can I just build it another way? Can I just be mentally strong some other way than being cold?
The cold, it'll just get you.
Like, I'll go play golf when it's 110. That's mentally challenging. I'd rather do that. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about your backstory and who is Sonny and how did you get to where you are today?
Oh, man, I sort of, like I was telling you earlier, I just got done or listening to the episode with your dad.
Yeah.
You interviewing your dad. And sort of something similar to him. I live by the moment. Like I don't really plan things. Things just happen, you know, to me, good or bad. And I grew up in a farm town down in Emory County.
Okay.
Called Orangeville farm town. I mean, to make money down there, you'd either be in construction, coal mining, or, you know, ranching, farming and stuff. So that's where I was born and raised and graduated high school. Went to college.
Hold on. So when you were in high school, what did you think your life was going to be? Did you think like, I'm going to be a rancher, farmer? Or did you think like, I'm going to go do something else?
I wanted to be in like the CIA or the FBI.
Oh, you did?
So
okay.
I was preparing to go to college to take, I was going to be taking like psychology and accounting classes and stuff like that. So I was looking at colleges to do all that.
What made you want to do that?
I had an uncle in the FBI for like 30 plus years, and the benefits were really amazing I seen for him and his family. And people watch. Do you people watch?
Oh, I love it.
You just like reading people and know, just watching mannerisms and just being able to see and people and what they do, you know? And so,
yeah, it's so fascinating to watch people. I love Vegas, like just because there's like you can sit down anywhere in Vegas and have a hell of a time. Dude. We were just in the airport, and I was saying like there should be a cognitive test that people have to pass to be able to be in an airport. Like if you can't feel me walking behind you and that you're continually impeding my space, you know, like, and it shouldn't be hard. It's like there's two lights, a red light and a green light. And it says press the green light. And if it lights up and you hit the red one, it's like you can't go to the airport. You're not allowed, or you have to have a buddy.
I can be down for that. I like that idea. That is a good one.
People just need some common sense. It was unbelievable just to watch. It was just, I was traveling with a business partner, mine, Spencer. We were just cracking up laughing because you can just see people who just make their life so much harder than they need to be, you know? But okay, so you're in high school, think you might want to be in the FBI. Mm-hmm. So then what happens after you graduate?
Go to college.
Where'd you go?
It was called College of, excuse me, Eastern Utah at the time, down in Price, Utah.
Okay, sorry. We've got Cinnabons here. Sonny brought them because he's such a good guy. Leaves at 4 o'clock in the morning and brings breakfast. And so, Cinnabon, if you're listening and you want to get in on this goodness that is Winning the Moment, sponsorships are available. So I'd hit me up for sure.
And me.
Yeah, and Sonny. It's a dual sponsorship thing.
So, yeah, College of Eastern Utah down in Price.
Okay.
I think Utah – or Utah State bought them out. Now it's College of Utah Eastern. Some, I can't remember, but I went there and got a little bit in too much into the social life because I was on a scholarship.
Not you.
Right. Yeah.
What were you on a scholarship for?
It was a private scholarship, some private scholarship, okay. Somebody like a grant, just giving money for a kid to go to school to get his degree, you know?
Sure.
So I went and yeah, I sort of threw that away by, I don't want to say party. I wasn't in the partying stage of my life at that point yet.
Yeah.
But I didn't go to school as much as I should have
and yeah.
Threw the scholarship away. And I think it was a few months later, I moved up to the city. When I say city, like Salt Lake and all that.
Yeah.
And
that's a city.
Yeah. Went and joined the military. And then that's where a lot of the rest of my life started to happen when I joined the military. So
what was the desire to join the military kind of a similar desire to like you're wanting to be in the FBI and stuff?
I wanted nothing to do with conforming to the military. Like I didn't want to deploy. I didn't want to do all that. I respect and love all of it, you know, but yeah. I just didn't want to join the military. I didn't want to be in the military.
Yeah.
But no, it was my older brother flew helicopters in the military and he had always been trying to talk me into joining since I've been of age and all that. Like 17 or something. And I had nothing. I didn't want to do it. And so when my life really was just going paycheck to paycheck and I was like, I think I want to join, you know? So I went to him and he helped me out with the process of getting in. So that's when I joined. It was summer of 2010.
So when did you graduate high school?
2007.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're 2 years after me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just joined the military at that point and was going to go through, let's see, I went on the deployment of 2012. So I joined in 2010, went through basic training.
How was that basic training?
Oh my gosh, dude. It was more of a mental toughness than because it's all they're really trying to do with the drill sergeants is look for quitters.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want somebody standing next to you at war that's going to quit, right?
No, so, right.
So they're pushing through all these physical trainings and if you can just take one day at a time, just live in the moment.
Yeah. Were you always physically fit or is that like a reflection of your time in the Army?
I would like to say I was always physically fit, but I don't know. I had played soccer growing up a little bit. I like soccer. And then just run around a lot. They tried to get me to do track, but I didn't want to run track or anything, but I liked to be physically fit. So yeah.
What was the most mentally challenging part of basic training?
Just being away from family. Like it was my first time being away from family and I want to say just away from Utah at that length of time.
Sure. Where'd you go for it?
I went to South Carolina.
Okay.
Down in, it's Fort Jackson. I don't know what it's named now. They're renaming all the bases for some reason. All the
probably
bases.
Because like it's racist or something now.
You got to be careful what you say in this world today, man. I don't know. Like, I think that's why I'm so private. I say something, I'm going to get canceled.
I know. It's crazy.
But yeah, it was in Fort Jackson, South Carolina at the time. That's like Columbia, South Carolina, if you know where that is.
Okay.
So that's where I was. And just
how long was basic training?
It was from, so I left in November and I was done with that in like that following February. And so I went to AIT, which is Advanced Individual Training, right after that. So after basic, they send you off to your MO, your position that you're qualifying for to learn on that in the your individual training. So you'd go that, and that lasted till June or July of 2011. So,
okay.
And then a couple months later, that's when we were getting our pre-deployment training to Iraq. We were getting called to Iraq.
But were you scared?
I wanted to go.
You did?
Yeah. I had no kids, not married or anything.
Yeah.
Single, 23 at the time, I think. So I was like, let's go.
Do you get paid more when you're deployed?
You get hazardous pay.
Yeah.
Family separation pay, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Not enough to be like, holy shit, this is awesome. A lot of money.
Yeah.
But it more so is the experience.
Yeah.
That really kept it fun. So.
And how long were you deployed for that time?
That fall of 2011 that we got, it's called off-ramped. So they're like, all right, you're not going on deployment anymore. And then it was like a couple months after that, like, okay, never mind. You actually are going on deployment, but to Afghanistan. So we're going back to like Camp Williams and doing some more training. And I left in January of 12 and then got back in January of 13.
Okay. So when you deploy, it's like always a year.
Yeah. National Guard wise. Yeah.
Okay. What's the craziest thing you saw when you were in Afghanistan?
I never really left the base much because you were
a mechanic, helicopter mechanic, right?
And so every day, you know,
yeah.
You're working, you don't really get a day off. I mean, there's not really anything to do over there anyway. Right. Like, what are you going to go walk outside the wire to the local market and get shot up? But, I would work on helicopters and it would get so boring, as you can imagine. I'd ask my commander, like, hey, can I go on like a ride with the Blackhawks or the Chinooks? And so I'd help transport cargo and people, and just out of all the places I've been in the entire world, I would have to say that Afghanistan has the most beautiful sunsets. Like, that's
really,
yeah, it's out of all the places I've been, I think hands down, they're just beautiful, man.
Wow. That's cool.
I didn't see anything crazy. No, I mean, nobody really shot at me, or I didn't shoot at anybody.
Was your base ever attacked?
There was, I think it was, I want to say one or two times.
Okay.
This recent deployment was crazier. There's indirect fire, IDF, and then just like at the ECP, the entry control points, people trying to get in and out of, people were hopping the wire in, trying to get in and all that kind of stuff. It's just a little bit crazier this last time. But
what do you test that to? What do you think it's crazier now?
Well, I call it like the trifecta, because keep in mind, we were over there, it was right when COVID happened.
Okay. So,
and then in the middle of an election, and then there was something else, the COVID election, and then the drawdown of how we were pulling troops out.
Oh, yeah.
And so
can you give your feedback on that, or is that like one that you got to be keeping arm's length from?
No, there definitely was a better –
should we have left, or should we have stayed? Like, what's – I don't know. You know, I'm genuinely asking.
So I feel – a lot of people have asked me this before, and what I keep saying is, throughout history, you know, you can see the U.S. in world wars and any war, that they have always kept a presence after the battles and stuff. So like Japan, Germany, like we always have a presence.
Yeah. I mean,
the United States has a huge presence around the world. Military. And so I feel like what was going to happen is, we were drawing down, we're going to pull out combatively, but we were going to stay there administratively, throughout history shows. And that's what was going to happen. There was a plan, a good plan. And then things happened, elections happened, and all of a sudden it seems like, to my experience, and I'm sure a lot of people can agree, it seems like just a switch. It was like, all right, we're actually going to do it. Not how we planned, and just totally out of left field.
Everyone pulls out.
And then just like vacuum. And then, as you know, with the events that happened there, with those explosions and those soldiers dying and everything, I mean, that could have been definitely prevented, because there was no...
Well, and the Taliban has regained control.
Yeah.
So does that, like, now is like all that for naught because they just have it back?
And I can attest to, like, that was a lot of us in my unit we would just question, like, why did we even go over there, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure we did some good, but at the same time, it's like, it's back to where it was before we were
there. Right now it's like we were never there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess we gave them 10 years of, is that how long? No, how long were there? 20 years?
At least 20.
Yeah. 20 years of, you know, so if you think about it, like if a young woman was born in Afghanistan, mm-hmm. she was able to get through adulthood and potentially get out of there.
Yeah.
So for all of those, for that whole generation of people, obviously you guys made a huge difference. But for the ones who were like, you know, in the middle of it now, who are like, if they're 10 now, they experienced 10 years of like safety and control, and now it's just back to chaos.
Yeah. It was very interesting. The rules of engagement over there this last time was a little bit hard because we weren't supposed to be doing anything. Like if you're being shot at, the instructions was to just basically fly away. Like,
oh wow.
And so if they weren't attacking like American soldiers, then we really couldn't attack back. Like if they were, cause we do joint missions, you know, with the local Afghanis, uh-huh. their forces, and to help them out with whatever they wanted to do. And then like, if they were getting shot up or whatever, it's sad to say, but we couldn't do it as effectively as if they were shooting at, like, it'd be a different story if they were shooting at Americans.
Sure.
Like, oh, okay, they're shooting at Americans now. We got to do something about it, kind of a thing.
Like self-defense, basically.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
It was a little difficult.
So do you know, like, if you were to get deployed again, because you're actively in it, do you know where you would go now?
There's rumors. Somewhere.
You can't say.
I know, about drop the ball. Yeah, somewhere.
You're out here giving like state secrets.
Yeah, right. It's OPSEC, operational security. I'm like, I gotta watch myself talking to somebody in a comfortable conversation. I might say something I'm not supposed to.
Okay, so then, so you have your military career, mm-hmm. which you're still actively in. Mm-hmm. But then I know that you've done some acting and some crypto. So, like, what have you done on the private sector side in your life?
So, yeah, I come home with a pretty good chunk of money, all just because I was jokingly putting in, like, a military bonus in the stocks. And so that was – it was when AMC and GameStop, that January of 21, everything started happening. And that just so happened.
You rode that? Did you write it while you were deployed or you were home?
I was in Afghanistan.
And you were riding the GameStop wave. <I did. laughs> From like what, Reddit? How were you getting your information?
So it started off, I was like, I was talking to my crew. And they're like, oh, military bonus. Did you guys get a military bonus? I'm looking at my like, oh yeah, I did. So there's this chunk of money that I got, right? That I didn't plan on having in my budget.
Sure.
So if I lost it, then it's like it was never there, right? So I took all of it, and that was around fall. I want to say that was around that previous fall. And so I put it in things like cruise liners and the entertainment industry, like the AMC theaters and all that kind of stuff. Because keep in mind, that's again when COVID was happening and everything
in that industry was tanking.
I'm like, ooh, okay. The industry has got to go back up. So I thought that'd be a smart way to put my money. And so, couple months later, it was that January of 21, one of my buddies says, oh, I didn't know crypto. I still don't know crypto, the crypto world. And they're talking, he was saying something about this Dogecoin thing. So it's like, dude, this thing's getting nuts. Like people are making so much money off of it. I'm like, yeah, whatever. And then it was, I don't know, the next day he's like, dude, you should put your money into it. It's like, it's climbing really fast. And I was like, oh, shoot, what should I do? What should I do? And so before I did, so keep in mind, while all that, he was trying to convince me to do Dogecoin, I had seen AMC, like I bought it at like less than a dollar a share at AMC.
Yeah.
And then it was climbing up to like 20 bucks, dude.
Right.
All that military. I was like, oh my gosh, it was.
It's a 20 times return.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I immediately took all that out and I had that chunk of money and that's when he told me about Dogecoin. And I was like, all right, I'll put a little bit of money. Now I'm playing with the house's money.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh.
So I put it.
And you probably feel like you're real smart.
At the time, like, yeah, everybody was asking me questions. I'm like, just like,
I'm an investor. It's not a big deal.
People were joking, like, you need to start a Twitter and whatever you say, we'll follow it. I'm like, okay, deal. All right. Whatever. So I put some money in Doge at about, it was just less than 2 cents.
Oh shit. And it got up to like 73 cents or something like that. So right.
My dude, I had seen,
I got into the Doge game late. Yeah. I could ride that. I got in like 40 cents.
Gosh dang. So
2 cents you got in.
Yeah. Yep.
And I just...
And was your main news source Reddit then? Or like
yeah, it was. I'm like, what? I have made more money on my thumb on this deployment than three generals combined.
Yeah, right.
It is crazy, dude.
So you're buying a Doge at 2 cents. When did you sell it?
I sold a lot of it around 50 and then a lot more of it around 30. I think the rest of it around 20.
God, those are some big 2 cents to 50 Dude, cents is a monumental jump.
It's
25 times return for those of you trying to do math at home.
I can't do math, but I know what money looks like. I just can't do math.
I know what money looks like. Yeah, it's probably more than I know. I don't know what money looks like anymore.
So that, I mean, so to answer your question of outside of the military,
Did you have any other bangers like that? Anything else that you did really well on that you're investing with?
Mm-mm.
No, just those ones mainly?
Just AMC and, I put some money in Shiba.
Oh, yeah.
Shiba.
Yep, Shiba coin.
That sort of.
Did you ever do Bitcoin at all? Did you ever buy into that?
No.
Just the red coins.
Yeah, it was just right place, right time.
Yeah.
Moment kind of a deal, dude, and just
that's the thing is people like you have those stories,
yeah,
and then so then a lot of other people lose because they think like, oh, this is like this works, you know, and they buy in at 72 cents, then it goes down to 30, and instead of getting a 25 times return, dude, they're losing all their money.
I'd start telling people like, listen, because people were wanting to hand me their money,
yeah,
and I here just put it away and do things with it for me. I'm like, listen, I don't know shit. I just lucked out and I'm just running away while I can before it just goes away.
I had a friend who was pretty good with crypto. And so I was like, all right, dude, I'm going to put in $5,000. Like, where should I put it? It's like 2,500 here, 2,500 here. And I was like, okay. And I told Brack and Drez and my wife, I was like, all right, well, I just bought a hot tub. So when it gets to $10,000, doubles my money, taking it out and paying the hot tub off, you know? Sure enough, gets to like 10,000, 11,000 like that. And so I can vividly remember I'm sitting on a couch upstairs. I look at Meg and I'm like, hey, like, look, we got it. It's at like 11,000. Let's take it out and hot tub's paid for. And she's like, why do you always do that? You got to be willing to risk. And I was what? She's like, yeah, you just play it. You're too safe. You're too conservative. She's like, you got to let it ride. Like if it's already at 11, who knows what it could go to? And I was like, okay. I shit you not, like less than 30 days later, it was all gone.
Oh my God.
And even now, like, let's just see. Let's just have some fun with it.
Oh, that's where I think me and Megan are similar. I would just throw that, like, I just throw my money, dude. I would throw my money away.
And it's like, I always had these plans and I was so good. Really, that all the COVID stuff got me in trouble because it's like making money was so easy.
Yeah.
That it just seemed like, oh, like everything will be fine because everything you do just makes money, kind of like your thing, right? Like just everything you put in was good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought like, oh, well, yeah, maybe she's right. Instead of like following my really regimented plans that I typically have, you know, to like protect myself. And then like Breck told me to buy Rivian and I stupidly did that. Okay. So now my portfolio, for those of you watching at home.
Oh, no.
That's horrible.
It's down to $1,600. So it was $11,000. Now it's at $1,600. That's a small amount of money, you know? Like, that's $9,000. Just.
Dude, I.
And that's just one thing.
Yeah. I don't want to say numbers of what I sold for, but I remember there was one day. Because that's a lot of money, right? When all that stuff was taken off. And so,
yeah, if you're 25 times in your money, like even if you put in $10,000, that's $250,000.
So I remember, I was like, sir, I'm not feeling well today. Can I just stay at the barracks? I need to sleep in. I need to just take a mental day or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, just come back tomorrow to the hangar tomorrow. So all day, I'm just on my phone, dude. And I'm an addict at this point, just staring at my screen, just watching the freaking climb going up, down, up, down. And it went, dude, within like 2 hours or less, it was $250,000 higher than it was previous. It was insane, dude.
So in 2 hours, you lost $250,000.
No, I made.
Oh. Oh my God. And what are you getting paid per hour at this time from the military?
Oh gosh, not like a salary.
Yeah.
Maybe like $5,000 or $6,000 a month.
Okay. So we'll just say like $50 an hour.
Can I go home right now? Like home to the United States of America? I don't need to be here, right? I'm more of a liability at this point.
Too much money. It went up $250,000
in a couple hours.
That's insane. What was that like for you emotionally?
It was, I'm just like, okay, now I definitely had to start thinking about the longevity of my money and what I wanted to do, like investment wise and play it out that way, what I wanted to come home to. So I started looking at houses to buy, which I thought would be a smart financial decision to buy a house.
Especially like at that time.
Yeah. So I remember I was looking, I was right around, it was spring of 21, right before I came home that I was looking at houses. I wanted to have a house ready for me to come into when I got back to the States. And so I had a realtor and everything looking at places for me. And that was when the housing market just started being insanely just stupid, like in a bad way for buyers.
Yeah. Yeah. Just blowing up.
It was, I started offering like 20, 30K over asking price, and I wasn't getting any bites, putting on some houses, you know? And so I started putting like 50K over asking price, and I still wasn't getting any bites.
That's wild.
I was being outbid. My realtor was telling me that there was people outbidding me with 100K over asking price.
It really was so crazy. I remember because we built our house in 2021 and the builders increased the price of our house over like 120 grand from like the contract that we signed that they would sell it for. And as frustrating as that was, which it was incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. Also, I knew that he was losing a bunch of money selling it to me, even at that increase in cost, because he could have just said, actually, you can't have your house. I'm going to sell it on the open market. You're welcome to bid on it. You know, it was like the Wild West. But now looking back at it, it's like I still ended up being a great deal. And then my interest rate is 3.25%. Now interest rates are 7.25%. So it's like my same house today on the open market, I'd be at like a $10,000 mortgage. It's just like, man, how are people ever going to do this? You know, like for my younger sisters who are in their 20s, when are they ever going to have a house? You know, like the people who work for my company who are just starting their like adult life, you know, it's like, when are they ever going to get a house?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Back then, I remember my dad saying like, well, what they bought, the average home was less than $100,000, right?
Yeah. Megan and I, the first house that we got in Arizona was like $187,000. And our mortgage was only like $1,100 a month. That was a brand new house we built. And then when we moved back to St. George, we still had our house in Arizona. So I was like, we got to just get a cheap house. We bought our house in St. George for $198,000, dude. Our mortgage was like $580.
I would die for that.
Right, you know what I'm saying? That's the house my dad lives in now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
And so it's like that doesn't exist anymore. In fact, case in point, that house that my dad lives in at one point was worth $450,000. So it's like, think of the difference for that young family, like to spend $98,000 or $450,000. Mm-hmm. It's a life-changing difference, you know? And so it's like, I don't know how it gets back there for people, you know? Because even if the prices come down, if the interest rates stay the same, those interest rates will just kill you.
I stopped renting last summer.
Yeah.
It's just getting too crazy. I was paying about $2,100, $2,200 for a 2-bedroom apartment up in Harriman.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So I was like, I can't keep doing this. I'm just throwing my money away.
Yeah. Right. So you never got a house then, obviously.
So I never got a house cause I couldn't, nobody would take my offers.
Yeah. Nor is it worth overpaying on a house.
Exactly. So I was like, you know what? The time will come when I'll get a house.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been living with my parents and then brothers or in between families right now. So just saving some money.
Where are your dogs at?
They're at my parents right now.
Your parents.
I was going to bring them with me today, but I take them everywhere.
Yeah, I know. I see that. It's awesome. So
they're tons of fun, dude. They keep me a lot of company.
I can't believe how well-trained they are. I mean, it's truly remarkable. You take them to the gym, take them into restaurants. Like they're just like, talk about companions, you know? Like they are arguably your best friends.
Yeah, they, multiple people have came up to me and said, I need to start a business training dogs. And so
it's unreal.
I've been playing around with the idea. We'll see.
I sent my dogs to like one of those dog schools, you know, mm-hmm. they went to Cars for Kids last year. Mm-hmm. And then they went again. So they've been gone for like about 70 days, you know?
Okay.
They don't hold a candle to your dogs, you know? I mean, they're good dogs. They're really, really good dogs, and they'll listen. But, like, you put them on a leash and walk around with them, they're still going to be like, you know?
So. Dude, it's a work every day. I'm with them as much as I can, you know, every day that I'm with them.
You're just getting them all that exposure.
Yeah, yeah. I remember telling myself when I first got them that I didn't want to be that guy in public with his dog or dogs that are just uncontrollable.
And, yeah.
You know, that don't listen. Like if I want to have them obedient, I just had to start at a very young age. Like day one, I was just out at the parks.
Yeah. Right. You brought him to Breck's wedding, like the day you got him.
That's actually the first stop I had. Yeah. Well, second, I should say, cause I couldn't find somebody like, hey, I got a wedding to go to. Can you hurry and babysit my dogs? Like you only had him for a couple hours. I was like, I know, but I'm going to a wedding right now.
That goes back to the not planning stage of Sonny's life.
yeah, that's where me and Phil tied. Oh, dude. Yeah. So I did. I forgot about that, dude. I took him up to Breck's wedding and I got there so late that it was towards the end of the wedding.
Gondola.
I'm riding the gondola up there with my pups and they're just like whimpering because, you know, they've only been away from their mom and their siblings for a couple hours. And so I'm like, oh God, I'm showing up to a wedding with whining dogs. I'm going to be the life of the party right now.
So. Are they both boys or boy girl?
Boys.
Both boys.
I only plan on getting the one because I've never had two dogs at one point and it'd be too much work, I thought. And so there was a litter of 12.
Wow.
And they were just trying to get rid of them.
And what kind of dogs are they? The German Shepherds?
German Shepherd, yeah. So I was like, well, I'll take two for a discounted price, you know. So they gave me two of them. And it was like day three, dude. They were just, like I said, they're whimpering because they're not so sure of the environment they're in right now. And I was so close from just finding, I don't know, putting them up on Craigslist or just going to somebody on the street.
Rehoming them.
Take these dogs, please. I can't take it anymore. I'm like, right, stick with it. It'll be worth it. And I'm so glad I did. That's so glad.
Yeah. And it's funny too, when our dogs had passed that we'd had like Megan and I's whole relationship, you know, we had to put to sleep right before we moved into her house because she had gone completely blind. Oh. And so she was fine in the house she'd lived in her whole life. Mm-hmm. But you put a blind dog in a new area. Mm-hmm. She couldn't have survived, you know? And it was her time anyways. And then my lab passed away shortly thereafter. We had to put him to sleep too. We basically lost all like control of his limbs. Like he would just fall over, you know? It was really, really sad. And I was so close to him. And so it's like, I told my wife, like, we're never getting dogs again. Mm-hmm. And then my dad and Barbara separated. My dad's like, well, I need to get a puppy, you know, so I have like some companionship. Mm-hmm. And so he finds this litter of puppies and they've got silver labs, which are super rare and cedar. And he's like, all right, I'm having him bring down the whole litter so we can check him out. And of course, and he's living at our house at the time while his renters are like in their last month in his house.
Okay.
And so my kids, of course, are like puppies, you know, and I'm like, and I am a sucker for lab puppies. I'm like, maybe we'll get one. And Megan's like, well, you know, if we get one, we have to get two. And I was like, you are batshit crazy too. I don't even want one. And she's like, it's easier if you have two.
Yeah, 100%.
And she's actually right.
Yeah.
So the labs, the puppies show up. And they're amazing. They're terrified. They've obviously never been exposed to humans. Like, you know, typically you open like a gate for puppies and they just like stumble out of on top of each other to get to people. They all stayed in. We had to get them out. And then they're like afraid of the grass. They'd obviously never seen it before. And we were like, oh no, like we can't send these puppies back. And we decided that we wanted to and my dad wanted to. So that means we had four of the six, right? Oh, and it's like, can we really just send two puppies back home? They're so young. So we ended up buying the whole litter.
Oh my gosh, I remember because you called me. You're like, hey, I got you a puppy if you want. Like, nah, I don't want any.
Yeah, so we got the whole litter. And then I kept two. My dad kept two. And then Breck took one. Mm-hmm. And then my cousin in Colorado took the other one. So for a while there in our brand new house, we had six puppies. That was a lot.
I bet your kids love that.
Oh, of course. Yeah, they thought it was.
Do they want to keep them all?
Oh, yeah. They thought it was the greatest thing ever. But it's been fun because my dad had two. Unfortunately, one of his already passed. It got kennel cough at that training facility, came back and was sick, and then like a day later passed away.
No shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so sad. And then, but Breck has one too. So it's like they still get to see their brothers all the time. And
yeah.
So it's been pretty fun.
Oh my gosh. I didn't know that. Maybe you told me, but I can't remember.
Yeah, it's really sad. Okay. So you made a bunch of money in investments while you were deployed. Mm-hmm. So when you came back, was it kind of just like, I'm going to have a blast, or what was the thought process?
100%.
Cause you've been gone for a year, not being able to have fun.
Yeah.
And now you have all this means and freedom.
Dude. That's a single guy's dream.
No kidding.
I was like, so we get home, and of course, I mean, I'm sure everybody has to have a bucket list.
Was there one thing really stupid that you did with your money? Was like there one thing that you were like, this is dumb, but I'm doing it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And maybe more. What's like the dumbest thing?
The dumbest?
Yeah.
I put a few grand on one roulette spin in Vegas. I've always wanted to do that.
Love that. That's not dumb. That's smart, dude.
Right? It's 50-50. You either win or you don't. And so I remember, like, all right, I've always wanted to take a chunk of change, like a pretty good chunk of change, and just throw it on one roulette spin and see what it goes to. And I'm down there with some friends. I throw it down and everybody's looking.
Wait, what color?
It was red.
Red?
Yeah.
Did you watch the board at all to like?
No, I just chose red because I like it? Red. Yeah. Okay. I just like, so everybody's looking at me thinking, okay.
How much?
It was like five.
Was it like five, or was it more than five, or was it five?
It was like five.
God, I wish I could have been there.
Dude, it was
because the ball rolls for like what, about 30 to 40 seconds. So it's like,
well, at that time, it seemed like it was 30 or 40 years just rolling and rolling, dude. I'm just like, all right, dude. And it freaking lands on black. I'm like, well, I can't win at everything in life. So I had to walk away. And that was the stupidest thing I ever done with a bunch of money.
Oh, God. Yeah. Did any part of you want to try again just to get back to even?
Yeah, but my buddies stopped me. I would have if my buddies didn't stop me.
Yeah.
I would have been that addict that just
lost. I wish you would have got it, dude.
That would have been a good story,
like,
right?
I'll put down 400 and like act like I just won a million, you know? Like, I couldn't imagine walking away with $5,000.
Oh, man. That whole weekend
was... So did you go to Vegas and just kind of send it?
100%. Yeah. Me and some deployment, one of my best friends I deployed with, and then a couple mutual friends of ours. There's a group of four of us that went down for a weekend. It was just a few weeks after we got back from Afghanistan. I'm like, all right, guys, we went all out. And some of it I paid for with the money that I had fortunately made. And then some by connections that we had down there. They're just giving us stuff. And I mean, we stayed at the top floor presidential suite.
That's awesome.
We had, you know, Escalade, just driver, you know, around. We went racing cars around the Vegas racetrack. We went flying stunt planes, dude. This was a weekend.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
It was like where they go up and like turn the engine off and like.
No, well, so there's this company down there, Sky's Combat, if you're watching.
If you want to be a sponsor, reach out to Sunny and I.
They have three locations, Lake Tahoe, San Diego, and Vegas. So we were in Vegas, and so they have different packages you can pay for, like the cheap package. They'll take you up and fly around, do some maneuvers, fun, you know, better than a roller coaster ride. It's amazing. And then the step up from that is like, they'll let you have controls at a certain altitude. And then the package that we got, is the top tier. Like, you can't go any higher. And so what that does is, we each had our own plane and pilot. It's tandem seating. So our pilot that is with us sits behind us, and they'll do the takeoff and then the landing. And once we get to a certain altitude, we can take over control of the plane. But before we do, they'll do like show us maneuvers and teach us how to do them and with the controls and everything.
So wait, did you have control of the plane and like you did like a...
Yeah.
Oh, no. Well,
I was flying upside down at one point, just inverted, you know?
No.
It was so crazy, dude. We'll have to go down there. When we go to Vegas, we'll have to do it sometime.
Oh my God. I don't know how exciting that sounds.
And it was basically adult laser tag in the sky. Because
I was going to say, were you guys doing
we
like...
We were dogfighting.
And no way.
They have lasers and stuff.
So you can tell if you hit them or whatever.
Because smoke would come from the plane if you hit them.
Oh my God. Okay, that sounds pretty sweet.
It was so fun. Yeah, we had teams. Me and
that sounds
one of my
amazing.
Buddies on one team. And then the other two are on the opposite team. And our whole objective was to cover some ground guys or whatever. And then like we separated, and then it was like 10 minutes later, like, all right, we're watching for the other two. And dude, it was so nerve wracking because we're just like, I mean, we could die at any moment, right? We're
yeah,
in
right.
the sky just flying our own plane.
And we see these guys and they're like, all right, start banking left. And we're just chasing them. We're just pulling. These planes, they pull more, if not equal to the G-forces of an F-16. It's
like, oh my God.
10 Gs. 9 to 10 Gs. It can pull up to 9 to 10 Gs.
That's crazy.
I was the only one that unfortunately blacked out.
And threw. I was going to say, yeah, because you totally could black out of that many Gs.
I was following somebody and they dipped to go up. And so I pulled it up. And that time my body just crunches down. And next thing I know, I'm waking up. My headphones are on my face. My sunglasses are off. I'm wiping my face. I'm like, gosh.
Well, and you're a maniac anyway. So in Cars for Kids, Sonny has got what kind of Lexus is that you've got now?
It's just the IS350 F Sport.
And what was your first one on the first car? It was a 352,
It's the one that I'm bringing this year.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I don't know why I got that confused. Yeah. And so here's this guy in this four-door sedan, you know? Yeah. And
Last year's car was fun.
And he is in front of everyone or catching you or staying right on you. And it was like, and he's got photographers like hanging out of the thing. He's incredible. Okay. So then how did you get into acting?
I was just right place, right time. I'd never pursued it. Somebody,
you are like my dad.
Dude, they had to convince me to go do this stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't want to.
They pick you up in a bar or what?
An actor? Who wants to be an actor? Dude, I don't want to be an actor. Are you kidding me?
But do you now?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. The money? Yeah. I actually just got a Jason Bourne residual the other day.
Nice. Yeah.
So you guys out there, watch Jason Bourne as much as you can.
You just like go home and like set your Netflix to play it?
I should just have every TV on the house on replay. Yeah. The streaming, all that. Yeah. But yeah.
So what all you were in? You're in the Jason Bourne movie.
That was my first gig. And then
where'd you film that at?
Vegas.
Okay.
I was in the Vegas portion of the movie. I filmed that. It was like a month long. It was January of 2016. And so I didn't get anything else later till in the year, later in the year. I was in a couple Hallmark movies, some like Cabela's commercials, just small time stuff.
Yeah.
And then a little bit later, I seen some email traffic. Somebody just by word of mouth said, hey, you should try out for this Yellowstone, be like a background guy on Yellowstone. So I was like, all right. I went up there and they picked me out of the group. I'm like, all right, we want you to be the bartender, right? Place.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, I'll be the bartender. And it was fun. So I've been in Yellowstone.
I mean, Yellowstone and Jason Bourne are two major franchises.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, dude, they're really good. I actually need to finish. I need to finish a couple episodes of the recent.
I think series. I do too.
I'm not caught up.
I don't think that I am either.
I don't have any speaking parts. It was just, I'm just serving Kelly Riley and her business partner, Kelly, who plays Beth. And so that was fun to be able to interact with them in between takes. They actually thought I was a real bartender because, I mean, in between takes, they're like, hey, can I get some water or where's the napkins? I'm like, I don't actually work here. I'm just, he's like, oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm also an actor. Yeah, thank you.
I'm also an actor. Nice to meet you.
I'm a professional.
Sonny. Here's my card. Who's your agent? Give me your agent.
So anything else exciting that you've been on or you got coming up?
There was, I want to backpedal to Jason Bourne real quick.
Okay. Yeah.
Keep in mind, it was something that I have never experienced in my entire life. And it was a whole new world to me. And I'm, as you can imagine, really excited to be in this big budget film.
Yeah.
Big name actors. And, so I'm, you know, of course, telling everybody, all my friends and family, like, all right, I'm in about six different scenes. I've got a speaking part. I'll just say a couple words in this one scene, get beat up, whatever, breaking and entering one room, trying to chase Matt. And I just like it didn't come out in theaters till July. So it was a few months after filming in January. And so in those few months, I just kept telling people, yeah, I'm doing this and this and this and this and these scenes. And so I did not know how the editing process works.
Yeah.
And so when it comes out, basically everything's cut. And I mean, there's a part in the movie where you could pause it and see me. And then a lot of people were like, I thought you said you were in the movie. I'm like, I promise I'm not lying. I swear I've got checks to prove it.
You got IMDb to prove it.
Yeah. So the coolest thing was just being able to see my name above the credits.
That is cool.
On the credits. So yeah, it was really an embarrassing, humbling time. Okay. Yeah. I'm going to keep my mouth shut until the final editing product comes out and everything.
That's funny. So. I had a friend on Naked and Afraid. And he was like doing all this publicity for the episode coming up, you know? Mm-hmm. And he got like sick the first day and was on the show for like a minute. And Brack's like, golly, all you do all that marketing, you think you'd actually have a real part in the show? Like, I was all excited to watch it and it was over in a minute.
Dude. Yeah. Jason Bourne, all there. The one cool movie that, which leads me into the story of being in a movie with Mark Wahlberg.
Okay.
Playing Bingo. In a movie called Good Joe Bell, and I'm not in the scene was cut. Like I wasn't playing with him. I was just that there's the bingo table. Uh-huh. There's like six people at this bingo table, and it's actually a movie about. So he plays the father of this kid who took his own life due to bullying, all that kind of stuff. So he was traveling actually across America, because that's what his kid was wanting to do, I guess.
Okay,
and he was. So he wanted to finish
that. Fulfill his kid's dreams.
Yeah. And so the scene was playing bingo. And I'm like, I learned my lesson of not saying anything from Jason Bourne. Yeah. So I'm not going to say anything until it comes out. And so I'm glad I didn't because the scene was cut. You couldn't see me. So that was another good – Mark Wahlberg's a good guy.
So talking about Walk Across America. So you want to talk a little bit, shift into what you're doing for that?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it. I thought of this idea in Afghanistan just for something to come home to, you know. I had nothing to come home to really, just because I've been on full-time military orders for a few years, and then after deployment, I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna take some time, have some fun, visit friends and family, and it's like, you know what, I'm just gonna do something stupid and crazy, walk across America. And so as I got home and was having a lot of fun with the friends. With all that money that I've made, I was like, you know what? I feel like I need to start giving back rather than start just throwing it out there. So like, all right, I'm going to do something with this walk across America. I want to start, you know, on the East Coast, go to the West Coast, and then each like major city I go through, hold events and have people walk with me if they want to join and donate as well for like veterans with PTSD and mental health and all that kind of stuff. So that's on my big priority list, is being able to make that walk happen.
Yeah.
So
do you have an idea of where you're going to start and where you're going to finish?
Jacksonville, Florida.
Is we're going to start.
And then end in San Diego.
Okay. So you're going to walk around along the southern part of the states?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How long do you anticipate it taking?
So I was running numbers. If I start in the springtime, then I could leisurely walk and it take me no later than like September. So from like March to September.
Okay.
If I really wanted to book it, like walk every day with no weather days or whatever. Yeah. I could do it.
Recovery days.
Yeah. Within.
Probably need that ice bath at that time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's still in the works. Like I told you earlier before we got on this podcast, I'm sort of been at a standstill the last maybe 7 months or so. I just been doing other things in life, taking care of other things that have come up, just doing some self discovery type of things.
Yeah. You know,
getting back into my rhythm of
private life. Citizen life.
Yeah.
So do you have a goal of when you'd like to start it? Do you have like, I hope to do it at this time?
I would, best case scenario, this coming spring.
Okay. It's like the March coming up.
Yeah. And then, I would like to do it at least before the next 4 years, you know, no later than the next.
And so,
are you
trying to get donations and stuff to help like sponsor that event, so that you can have the funding to? Because obviously, it's going to be expensive to complete that journey.
Yeah, 100%. It's going to be it's going to take that many months to walk across, and I need something to pay my bills with.
Yeah, right. Well, so, and just to survive that whole time, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking of people that...
Will the Army support that at all?
I've talked to them, and they could get maybe some people from, like, recruiting to donate something.
Yeah.
If I talked about the Army and stuff, so... Yeah, it's a fun... idea. I love it. I wanted a purpose. And I think that's one thing that people in the military struggle with when coming back from deployments is they get back to society. Keep in mind, they're gone for however many months at a time.
Yeah.
And you see a lot of people with PTSD, and what it really is, I feel like is a lack of purpose when you come home.
Yeah. Because well, cause you're there. Just doing this huge purpose-driven mission, right?
Exactly.
And so when you come back and you're sacrificing your life, and then you come back and you're just living day to day,
yeah,
I could see how that would be like, you know, a big letdown.
It's 100% scary to come back to a modern civilization where you don't know who really has your back, who you can depend on, or, I mean, you're worried about like stoplights and all that kind of stuff, as opposed to all you had to worry about, as ironic as it is just somebody killing you. That's all you had to worry about. You didn't have to worry about doing your laundry. Yeah,
when your meal is going to show up.
Exactly.
Where are you going to sleep that night?
Exactly, dude.
What are you going to do when you wake up?
Yeah, as diverse a group you are in a unit, you know, many different people from many walks of life, you know that the person next to you has your back 100%.
Yeah, you got a real brotherhood.
Real brotherhood. And that's the best thing that the military has gave me. I originally joined to be with my brother, and little did I know I was going to gain about 400 of them.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Cool. Yeah. What a great line. Okay, so let's get into the questions. So you've read the book, so you know when I talk about win, I mean it whatever way that you perceive it. Mm-hmm. But what has been the biggest win in your life?
Biggest win of my life, I think, is to find happiness. Because I think a lot of people have that backwards. Once you become successful, then you will be happy. But I think once you become happy, then you'll be successful.
What a great line.
100%.
Someone asked me just when I was in Florida, because I said something about happiness, and they said, how do you define happiness? And so I'm curious, with that being your answer, how would you define happiness?
Just being able to find the freedom to spend time with those you care about. That's all all that I need to be happy, I should say, is my close friends and family. Just being in the company, we don't necessarily have to be doing things.
Yeah.
But just being able, my happiness is just being in the company of those I care about.
That's awesome. That's funny. I said the same thing, because when they asked me that, I said freedom, I think is all it comes down to.
Yeah,
right. 100%. Because that's open enough to say, like, to freedom to be with my family, freedom to do the things I want to do when I want to do them. But yeah, I think freedom at the end of the day is what it is.
Yeah.
So then in that vein, what's your biggest loss?
Biggest loss is, I would have to say, growing up, not being able to act as I should have been as a brother. Like, I'm sure, you know, siblings, you know, you have sibling fights back and forth.
Yeah.
But I think when I look back at things, I should have took care of my younger siblings more so than I should have, if that makes sense.
Then you did?
Yeah. Like,
younger siblings do you have?
Two.
And how much younger are you? Younger than you are they?
My sister is a year and a half younger than me, and then my younger brother is about 9 years younger.
Okay.
And so I know I could have done better for them to look up to somebody, but I was just, you know, unresponsible. I don't know. Making up
you were just
at that point.
You were just a free just living a kid, individual.
Just free living individual.
Well, what about now? How's your relationship with them now?
Oh, love them. I'm the only one in my family that doesn't have any kids or no married. So I just, I like to spoil them. Give them sugar and then hand them back to their parents.
Yeah. Are they still in that farming town, or where do your siblings live?
So they're all over. Well, my youngest brother, he's still in Orangeville. He just had a newborn baby girl, I think a week or so ago.
Okay.
And that's his third child.
Wow.
He's still in Orangeville. My younger sister, she's in Wyoming. And my brother, just older than me, is in Wyoming as well.
Where in Wyoming are they?
She's in Mountain View.
Okay.
And then my brother is in Rock Springs.
Okay.
And then one brother in Boise, and then my oldest brother in Highland, Utah.
Man, you got a big family.
Yeah. I love it.
What took your siblings to Wyoming?
Mining.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mining. Yeah, natural resources.
Yeah.
And then what about mentor? Is there a mentor in your life that you've had that's really made a difference for you?
Nobody specific, just over time. It's been, I want to say mainly my brothers and my dad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cheesy and as cheesy and corny as that sounds, like those are the people I grew up with. Right. And so you see how you hear stories of when my dad was younger and what he's gone through, and then being able to watch my older brothers grow up. I mean, my older brothers are about 9 or 10 years older than me. And so I never really grew up with a brother because my younger brother was 9 years younger than me. So
yeah, right.
So I was really envious and jealous of that, those friends that had brothers growing up. And I think that's why I love the military so much, is because I found...
Yeah, you found that brotherhood.
That brotherhood. And I love it. I love it. And so my mentors, I have to say, just being able to watch the life of my brothers and father just growing up and seeing what they did and how they provided for their family. I loved it. It's very inspiring and awesome to look up to. So
I love that. Well, I'm sure they're going to love to hear this. Yeah. So I know you're in the middle of reading Winning the Moment. Is there any part that stuck out to you as your favorite or something that you really enjoyed or took something away from?
Yeah, a couple of things. I remember reading about the part where, was it you and Breck went to China?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's insane. Yeah. That's got to be a crazy story.
It is a great story, yeah.
How long were you over there for?
Well, I think the one in the book, dude, we were only there for 4 days. That's it. And we had to go to LA first to get a Chinese visa, because I didn't know you had to have a visa to go to China. So you go into the Chinese consulate, you give them your passport, which is in itself a little bit scary. Mm-hmm. And they just like throw it over their shoulder in a bin and you just hope that you're getting it back, you know? And there's like bullet holes all in the Chinese consulate, and they're like, oh yeah, people come and try and shoot it up. I mean, it was wild. And then we found out, as you know, in the book, that we weren't going to get our loan from the bank.
Yeah.
In front of the Chinese consulate. And so we're like, well, we still got to go. We got to get furniture, you know? And then we're there for 4 days and luckily convinced Steve Mittman, the designer and manufacturer, to build us $1 million of furniture in a handshake deal, you know? Mm-hmm. So thank goodness we're personable, because otherwise that trip would have been all for naught, you know?
I was like, the whole time I was reading that story, I couldn't imagine being in your guys' shoes. That's insane.
It was a wild, that's a good one. That's a good story.
And then the other part in the book I was thinking about is you had mentioned Sarah, where she was living her life in like what ifs.
Oh yeah.
And I used to, but there was I can't remember what exactly turned it around, but it was somebody, I heard somebody tell me, you know, live your life in oh wells rather than what ifs. You know, you don't want to look back in your life like, oh, what if I would have done that?
Yeah.
Like, oh well, you know, I'd done that, and like, oh well, what happens now? So live your life in oh wells rather than what ifs.
I love that. Okay. Then last question for you. How do you define success?
The success is going back to originally just being happy.
Yeah.
Being able to be comfortably happy with those you care about, you know, being able to provide for your friends and family and, without any, I don't know how else to say it.
But without any regrets.
Yeah, without any regrets.
Right, rats. Regrets. Okay, yeah, so anything you want to leave the audience with?
Hold on. Yeah, so I think, you know, just by winning the moment, the title of your book and moments, I feel like, you know, a lot of people get caught up in the anxiety of yesterday and the stress for tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Like, all we have is today. All we have is today. So often we say that we wish we had known back then what we know now. You know, we sometimes think about returning to our past so we can make new choices, so we can live more fully, so we can cherish what we had while we had it and love it all just a little bit more. But we can't go back. Like, if we're always thinking about going back, we're going to miss out on what we have right now. And so today, one day, today's the day we're going to wish we had, you know, wish we could return to and cherish a little bit longer and love a little bit more. You know, maybe we can't go back to the past, but I know for a fact we can create a present moment so beautiful it doesn't need to be changed. 100%.
Wow, what a great way to end the podcast. I couldn't have said it better myself. If you want to connect with Sonny, you can find him on Instagram at Sonny Earl Robertson, and I'll put that in the show notes. Do you have anything created yet for the walk, or is that'll come later?
Come later.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Sonny, thank you for being here. I loved hearing the stories. There's some of the stories I hadn't heard yet, and that was a blast. And the fact that you drove all the way down here this morning just to be on the podcast just goes to show what kind of guy you are. So thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. I loved it.